We hope you find this WILL podcast to be valuable. A $10 voluntary credit card contribution at willpledge.org will help us continue to make podcasts of our programs available. Thank you. And that address again is willpledge.org. WILLPLEDGE.ORG. Now here's your program.
Good morning. Welcome to Focus. This is our morning talk program. My name is David Inge. Glad to have you with us. We're also happy to have back on the show again Sandy Mason. She's a horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County. Monthly, on a Tuesday, she is here, and we talk about things that grow in the home landscape. So trees, shrubs, flowers, ornamental plants, stuff you can eat, house plants, any and all of that. Maybe you have a problem, something that you have to get solved from the last season, or you are already starting to think about what you would like to be planting this year and you'd like to get some advice or some suggestions, any and all of that, certainly fine. All you have to do is call us here in Champaign-Urbana. 333-9455 is the number. We do also have a toll-free line, 800-222-9455, and email. You can send your email to will-talk, W-I-L-L-talk, at illinois.edu. And we'll take as many questions as we can. Thank you very much for being here.
Yes, good morning. I was hoping it would be a nice, lovely, almost spring day, but...
Well, no. Not quite. It seems like every... I don't know how long it's been that. It seems like every day I go out the door and I'm greeted by the same thing. It's gray, it's overcast, it's raw, it's kind of... It's not freezing cold, but it's unpleasant cold. I keep thinking one day the sun will shine again, but we'll see.
It will.
All right. We have several callers here. We'll get right into it and start with Champaign. Line number one. Hello.
Sandy, great to have you back.
Great.
And David, it's always a pleasure.
Thank you.
What works well in this area for red, white, and blue, a red, white, and blue motif? And can you recommend a good resource for flowers of all colors that work in this region? I'll take my answer off the air.
Okay, but are you looking for annuals? Like annual flowers?
I guess they are annuals. Yeah, annuals.
Okay. Red, white, and blue. Oh, you're so patriotic. That's wonderful.
Well, all colors. Let's consider the whole gamut. But in particular, I have, one design. It's not the flag, but I have one design in mind.
Oh.
I'll take one off the air.
All right.
You'll have to send us pictures or something.
Yeah,
do you want
that.
Me to stay on, or shall I let this go to somebody else?
Well, I guess just a couple questions first, if you don't mind.
Sure.
Like what kind of, are we talking about full sun? Is it, kind of the conditions?
Full sun.
So, and you have halfway decent soil, so that's not an issue.
I'm not real sure. It was formerly corn was growing there. Huh. It's kind of hard.
Okay. Well, then you're fine. So I think full sun obviously gives us a lot more options when it comes to, especially with annuals. And certainly as far as the red, white, and blue thing, for the most part, I think some of the great reds are the red salvias. And there are really some fantastic ones now.
Salvia? Even
some of red salvia. It's actually, there's different types of salvia, so it's kind of confusing. And some of them are more like annuals, and some of them are actually perennials. But there are some really nice red salvias.
Okay.
And they tend to be kind of a spike flower, which is really pretty, and you can put that as kind of it really makes a nice statement in the garden, even
all
as
right.
a background or whatever.
I like it.
Celosi is another one that has some really intense reds, if you're wanting that more of a spike look. So Celosi would be another one. And then certainly petunias.
I guess hardiness is what I'm really interested in.
Hardiness as in tolerates tough conditions?
Well, sort of. I mean, I can probably get out and water it once a week. It's at a garden a few miles away.
Oh, okay. Well, I think for all of these, for the most part, if you can water them, annuals always take a little bit more water in the beginning simply because they have a reduced root system. They're just not like perennials that have a more extensive root system. So you're going to have to water them certainly more in that first, week or two, and depending on what the weather is. But usually if you mulch things, they're going to do better if you can water them once a week. But if that doesn't happen, then most of these will tolerate, they'll be fine.
Okay.
They're really pretty tough all in all for those.
Salvia or petunias?
Yes, petunias are another one of those that you can get red, white, and blue just in petunias if you want to. You could do a whole petunia garden in red, white, and blue, and actually any color of under the rainbow just about for when it comes to petunias. Certainly some blues and stuff. There are some blue salvias, which are particularly nice. There's azuratum. I don't know if you know. That one has more like a little powder puff, kind of a little lighter blue color, but it's still kind of a nice blue, so you can get those too. Okay. So those are some, I think, some pretty nice ones. As far as other colors, there's lots of resources out there. I think a few authors that I think are particularly good. Alan Armitage has one. He does a lot of stuff on annuals and perennials both, but has a good book on annuals and has a nice pictorial guide of annuals. You can also go to the U of I Extension website, and we actually have a very nice website when it comes to selecting annuals, but also perennials, and there's lots and lots of horticulture information out there under the U of I Extension website. So if you just go to University of Illinois Extension, you can find under horticulture, all kinds of things. And the nice thing is there's pictures, because as we know, we kind of like to have those pictures so you can get a better idea what you want to use. So maybe those are some good starts at least.
Okay, thank you so much.
All right, very good. Well, let's go on. And the next person is going to be someone in Urbana in line two. Hello.
Hi. Mm-hmm. One of the catalogs that just came in is from my far distant, different climate nursery, High Country Nursery in New Mexico. I think I had written to them because I wanted to find Agastache. So anyway, the catalog comes, and I'm thinking, do I really want something from there? Haven't had much luck with the Agastache, but one of the things that caught my eye was they were talking about having a dwarf fescue grass seed mix that only grows to 5 inches high, and you can either leave it at 5 inches or you can mow it a couple times a year and it doesn't use much water. And I was wondering whether you had any comments about such a mix of dwarf fescues.
Yeah, I'm not sure exactly what it is, to be honest with you. I don't know. Did they give you any other name, like a fine fescue or chewings fescue?
No, I don't think they did, and I don't have the catalog right here.
Yeah, that's fine.
Mix of different fescues.
Right. Here. Well, I would just check, because we certainly grow fescues around here. We have fine leaf fescues and chewings fescues that are often used that's that kind of fine grass that you often see in shadier conditions underneath the trees or whatever in lawn situations, because they do better in shadier spots. This doesn't really sound quite like that, because this sounds like something that's real, supposedly real drought tolerant and all that kind of stuff. Is that the idea?
Yeah, it doesn't need much water.
I think we've certainly ordered things, or I've certainly ordered things from High Country Gardens for the idea garden. You know, some of the plants that are out there actually come from that catalog, so I think it's a good catalog. But because of where it's from, you always have to be concerned about, obviously, you know, those kind of, it's more of a rockier, sandier, just different soils than what we have here. And so some of the plants just languish because our soils are actually too good for them. So I'd really look, and if I remember correctly on that particular catalog, they actually have a designation. I don't remember exactly what the symbol is, but the designation, it says something like better for mountainous regions or something like that, or rocky regions or something like that, where it tells you, this probably isn't going to be good for a Midwestern garden. So I'd really look at those. I just don't remember what that is. And I'm sorry I don't have more information on that particular fescue, but I'd really wonder about whether it's cool season or warm season. If it's a warm season grass, that's okay. We tend to have more weed issues sometimes in the warm season grasses, because they don't do real well in the beginning of the season. So a lot of our cool season weeds come in first. So we have some weed issues sometimes with those. Buffalo grass is a good example of that. People have been interested in that as a shorter grass, but we really have some issues here because of those cool season weeds that come in early and they just don't take off fast enough. So I'd really wonder whether it's a cool season, warm season grass. That would be one thing I'd really wonder about. And then, I think it would definitely be worth getting a little bit more information to see if that's something that's going to do well here.
Okay, good questions to ask.
Yeah.
I did use a fescue mix that was supposed to be low water use. I found it in, I think it was Do It Best Hardware, maybe locally. And I used it to fill in some areas that I pulled weeds out of in the my husband calls it the tree lawn, the area between the sidewalk. I think it's a regional name, maybe. And it's interesting because in summers where we've had not much rain, and this is a place where it's kind of hard to get a hose to, so I tend not to water it unless it's really drastic. But it's pretty clear that the fescues are holding up better when there's not much water than compared to whatever else was growing there. Who knows what it was.
Right, right. Now, those are probably tall fescues.
Probably.
The turf-type tall fescues, which is kind of hard to say. But and tall fescue, it absolutely is being used more and more as for those kind of low-maintenance areas, as in, you know, you're not going to fertilize as much. You know you're not going to water it. You know these things. And so you go ahead and go with these turf-type tall fescues. And I'm with you. I've seen really good results from those. There's a couple of things. You know, they tend to be more bunch-type growth. So if you have a lot of wear and tear, as in kids or dogs or whatever, sometimes they don't recuperate as fast as what we might get with Kentucky bluegrass. So there's a little bit of an issue there. I have noticed that it actually grows almost too well in the spring. It definitely grows even faster, where you might actually even need to mow it, you know, like a day or so earlier than you do with your Kentucky bluegrass, because it's doing so well in those early, that's kind of spring, cool, wet kind of stuff. But then certainly as summer goes on, it definitely, I'm with you, it does much better. So those are turf-type tall fescues. They're certainly available around here, and I think they have some really good advantages in some areas. So,
given how much we're drawing down our water table in the in our aquifer that supplies our water, and our population keeps increasing, I think it's a good idea to be thinking about water conservation and planting appropriately.
Yeah, absolutely. And this, I would definitely, I would be more apt to go with those turf-type tall fescues rather than thinking about necessarily what's at High Country Garden, because we know that turf-type fescues do well here, and we have, you know, they're available, and, you know, there's a lot of advantages to them here. So I'd probably be more apt to go that direction than. You know, I'm all for trying new plants, so.
Thank you.
All right, thank you. Our guest in this hour of focus is Sandy Mason. She's horticulture educator with U of I Extension, Champaign County. Every month on a Tuesday, she's here. We talk about lawn and garden care, and we can take your questions. We have several people ready to go. You'd like to call in, 333-9455 for Champaign-Urbana. Toll-free, 800-222-9455. Piatt County is our next caller. Line four. Hello.
Oh, good morning.
Yeah.
I want to say, first of all, Michael Pollan has edited a series of reprinted books on It's the Modern Library Gardening, and there are some old garden writers that are just really good, and so I was reading them this winter, getting all interested, and one of the garden writers said that it's time in March to, he punched holes with a crowbar, he said, around the drip line of his trees and put in fertilizer. And I have put in a lot of trees, and some of them are about 3 years old now, and I'm still putting in trees. So I was wondering, should one fertilize one's trees and put manure in the ground near the roots?
Well, I think certainly as far as getting to that, you know, you're at that stage, that three-year stage, because any more I recommend that you don't do a whole lot of heavy fertilization on trees when they're young, mm-hmm. as in that 1 to 2 years, mm-hmm. You know, let them get established and stuff. So you're really at that point where you could go ahead and fertilize. I guess a couple of things. I'd have a few comments about that. You certainly could go ahead and fertilize, and actually just even your crowbar method is just kind of a low-tech method. We certainly, you know, have used those kind of methods before. We actually either put holes in the ground and then put fertilizer in. So absolutely, people want to go that route. But a few things I would think about. If they seem like they're growing, if you're getting 6 inches of growth out of a tree, 6 to 8, I'd be pretty happy with that, and I wouldn't worry too much about fertilizing it personally. I would be more concerned about with a young tree like that is actually, we're talking about watering. I'd be more concerned about watering during drought periods than I would
really,
fertilizing.
Yeah, we've tried to do that.
Yeah, so that would be one thing. So if you want to really, if you really don't feel like they're growing as fast as maybe you like, then certainly fertilization might be an option. You certainly could use compost, you know, mulch, those kinds of things. We're actually trying to enrich the soil. Certainly can help the trees as much as anything for some of these. So trying to pump a lot of fertilizer in them isn't necessarily the best route. But.
Okay, and then I was going to just plant some apple trees that you get like at the big box stores. And I see that on the gardening program, they talked, one of the people who deals with trees said that perhaps semi-dwarfs would be better than dwarf trees, and I had never heard of semi-dwarf fruit trees, and I read on one of the tags they get to be about 30 feet tall. Mm-hmm. That seems pretty big for
yeah,
a
semi-dwarf. Yeah, it is.
Are they better than the regular apple trees, or are they just smaller, presumably?
Well, they're small. They call them semi-dwarf because a true apple tree could easily get 40, 45 feet. So okay. So 30 is dwarf compared to that. So it's all relative. Now, I think a lot of times we do recommend the semi-dwarf instead of dwarf simply because in the dwarfing ones, the reason they're dwarf is that they have dwarf rootstocks. So when they have dwarf rootstocks, as in the rootstock isn't as big as you might typically think, It tends to be more susceptible to blowing over in the wind. It doesn't have as extensive root system. So that's why a lot of people go with semi-dwarf, because you're kind of getting hopefully the best of both worlds. A dwarfing, so it's not quite as big, but yet maybe a little bit more vigorous rootstock, so you don't have to worry about the thing blowing over, which, you know, or falling over just because it's so heavy from all the fruit. So that's usually why a lot of people go with semi-dwarf. But they do get big. I have semi-dwarfs at home, and easily they'll 30, 35 feet is no problem for them. So
can we assume that if they're at the big box stores, they've been grown in the appropriate zone?
I wouldn't know, to tell you the truth, on where they might get them. If you read the label, usually if you do a little bit of research and actually read the label, a lot of times you can figure out really quick where they're coming from. But the other thing I would really do, especially if you're going to go with a fruit tree, is unless you know that that's a particular variety that you really want, you know, I'd do the homework first and really figure out which varieties you want, and then realize you're going to need some cross-pollination there.
Yeah.
So you're going to need to make sure you have two different varieties. But if, you know, if they have Golden Delicious and something like that that you know you really like, then I think that's fine. But you just look at the quality of the plant like we would at any place, just to make sure that it has a nice, seems to have a nice structure to it and
okay.
That kind of good
and then
stuff.
Last question really fast is, I saw that Menards had some rose bushes. They looked really good. But isn't it early to put out? I mean, do you buy one and put it out now?
I'd be a little, are they in full leaf?
Yeah, they were.
Wow.
They looked so healthy and...
Wow.
Gee, it seems early.
Yeah, I'd be a little bit concerned about putting them out now. I would think around the 1st of April, I'd be more apt to think about it'd be fine. But even at that time, we're usually thinking about bare root that doesn't have all those leaves on them. So I'd be a little bit concerned if they're fully leafed out. And sometimes you'll get perennials and stuff like that where, you know, they've been kind of forced along. Maybe they've been in a cool greenhouse and they're farther along than they really should be. So you certainly could put them out. But if it really looks like it's starting to get into the 20s or something at night, really get cold, you might decide you want to go ahead and cover them, or just, you know, keep them in the pot and kind of keep them in a more protected area, and then kind of wait, you know, make sure they're in the sun, but then kind of move them back and forth depending on what the temperature is. But we get in the 20s,
yeah.
You know, something in full leaf like that could certainly, it may not kill the plant, but certainly would probably kill the leaves off at this point.
Well, do you put it in water or leave it in they're wrapped in really tight plastic?
Oh, they're not in pots or anything?
No, they're wrapped in that really tight plastic.
Oh.
I mean...
I would go ahead and pot them up. If you think you're going to keep them for a while, and actually that's probably what I would do if they're in full leaf, I would go ahead and pot them up.
Oh, okay.
You know, put them in a container, pot them up, and then just leave them in the pot, as I said, just kind of move them in and out and sort of play with kind of what you're looking at as far as the temperature and what's going to happen. But I would certainly wait until April before I think about planting them. And even at that, on a fully leafed rose, I'd be still a little bit concerned.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for your help.
Oh, mm-hmm. Very good. And we will go again to another caller. And this is Champagne and Line 3. Hello.
Hello. I had a question about starting a vegetable garden. Mm-hmm. We have a lawn on the west side of our house that our neighbors have kindly allowed us to contemplate putting a planter of vegetables in. And I wanted to ask you a couple specific questions. One is, we have a rabbit and squirrel population that seems to just go at it. And is there a way to protect your vegetables from those without being too unsightly, because it is our front yard? And how intensive would such a plot be in the month of June, let's say, to July, late June to late July?
Mm-hmm. As in how much time it might take?
Because we'll be gone for a month.
Oh, okay. Ooh. Got anybody that's going to help you weed a little bit?
You probably could, but I want to have like some idea like how big to plant, because it would be too much of a burden if we had, you know, I mean, I'm like trying to keep it under control, mm-hmm. something that a kind neighbor might be able to handle, or
you can
or
share
a poor
the
graduate
veggies.
Student such as myself.
You can share the veggies later. I guess a couple things I'd wonder. So this is in your front yard, you said?
Yeah.
Or kind of in the...
It's right now, it's a lawn. And it's, okay. It's really hot there. No one, we don't really use the space in the summer, but it gets great sunlight, which we
sure.
don't get anywhere else. So we thought that would be the best mm-hmm. location in mm-hmm. the sunlight. But
mm-hmm. So are raised beds an option for you at all?
Yeah, that's exactly what we're thinking.
Okay, so you're thinking about raised bed. Okay.
Yeah.
So I think that helps immensely because it helps to sort of contain things. And plus, I don't know how high you're going to make them, although they can still, you know, rabbits can still jump, and obviously the squirrels can get into them even at that. But usually you don't have to have quite a big because I will tell you, usually if you have really high populations of especially of rabbits, squirrels, both, you're going to have to probably fence it. But it doesn't have to be, you know, really ugly fencing by any means. But if you have a raised bed and it, say it's raised, I don't know, 12 inches or so, and then you put, you know, just a small fence above that, then usually you're a pretty good height where you don't have to worry too much about, and you know, unless the squirrels like to jump in, which obviously that's another issue all the way around, but you may have to wait and kind of find out if that's going to be an issue for you. So I would just plant, if you know you have squirrel issues, you know you have rabbit issues, I would just plant ahead of time that you're just going to have to deal with them. And I still think fencing is probably your best route. I've had some pretty good reports. People have said there's some new repellents and stuff out that people have had some pretty good results with. But repellents, if things are hungry enough, they're going to go right through repellents.
Right.
So as far as intensive, I think a lot of it depends on what you plant.
Right.
So it would be one of those things that if you wanted to do, you could probably get away with, if you want to plant spinach,
I've got a list here. This is what we got family of four, two elementary school kids.
Okay.
They will eat peas, they will eat carrots, they will eat tomatoes. And
okay.
The adults like kale, collard, and lettuce.
Okay. Yeah, it's going to be a little bit tough. I think probably what I would do, any of that early stuff, like actually, you know, it's a little early, but you could probably certainly get away with even planting, you know, I realize the beds, but by the time you get the bed done, you probably go ahead and plant these. Any of the leafy stuff, I'd get them in as soon as you can. That way that they're probably done by the time you would leave in June. You know, they're going to be finished. So you'd have your full crop of any of that leafy stuff
okay.
that you can think of. So I would get that in as soon as you can. And certainly peas would be another one of those. I'd get it in as soon as you can.
Okay.
And you could probably even wait a little bit later, obviously, into the month of April. But I'd get them in as soon as you can. And then that way all that stuff's pretty well done. The warmer season stuff that I heard was tomatoes, I think, was really kind of
right.
the warmer. Most of this stuff sounded like it was more cooler season. So I think I would probably get in the early stuff. Get that all harvested, and then plant your tomatoes, and then mulch them. And then hopefully that'll keep down any of the weed issues, and people won't have to water as much while you're gone. And then when you come back, I would think about a fall crop of all that other stuff.
Oh, okay.
And it actually plant it in August and September, depending on what it is. And then plant on a fall crop, because then you don't have to worry about things, unless you know somebody's going to harvest for you.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, that's great.
So, yeah.
Thank you so much.
Uh-huh.
All right, very good. And
Hi.
Chicago, line number one. Hello.
Hi, my name is Al.
Sure.
And my question has to do with rhubarb. And I have some rhubarb that has managed to get entangled with garlic chives. And I don't see any good way of getting rid of them. I was thinking maybe even digging them up and trying to separate out the roots. And I wonder if you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, boy, you have found out. Garlic chives, I like garlic chives, but they reseed like crazy, as you found out. So I think you're actually on the right track, because I think for a lot of these things, we fight them, and really what we should do is just dig up the whole thing, just what you're talking about, and then start to separate it, because you'll see with the garlic chives, they actually form, if you've dug them up before, you know this, but they actually form just a tiny little of a bulblet at the bottom. So if you're trying to pull them up, it's really hard, but if you separate them, they're really easy to separate. So I think you're on the right track. It probably might be a little bit early to be digging up the rhubarb, but certainly by the 1st of April, I'd go ahead and dig it up, as you said, separate it, put the rhubarb back in, and then you'll know it's out of there. It's going to be
That's
really
what
hard
I think to I have to do. Then do I have to wait after that to use the rhubarb? Or?
You know, if you're not dividing it, if you're just sort of picking it up and then plopping it back down, you could use some of it. I'd probably sort of let the plant sort of tell you. My guess is it'll probably come back quite vigorous and not really have to worry about it. Usually we say don't use a lot of it if you've actually divided it and, you know, made those crowns smaller. But at this point, if you're just sort of pulling it out and putting it back in, I think you'll be fine. You may not get quite as big a harvest, but I think you'll be fine harvesting.
Okay. Thanks a lot. I appreciate your help.
Sure.
All right. Very good. Well, the lines are all full. If you'd like to call in with a question about anything that grows in the home landscape, this is something that we do once a month with Sandy Mason. She is horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County. So she's here on this program once a month. I do want to plug a show that we do here every week on WILL television. It's a show called Illinois Gardener. And it's a live program, and there's always the opportunity to call in with questions. There is a rotating cast of characters that are on the show. Sandy is one of them. People from the university and people who work in some of our local garden centers and people like that who are really serious about gardening and great sources of information. So this is a program that's on Thursday nights, 7 o'clock on WILL TV. You can call in with questions. And we're now doing some new things. One thing we did want to mention is that we have a blog, Illinois Gardener blog, and sometimes Sandy has contributed columns, and there I was just looking at it, and there are a number of articles, short articles on there right now. You can find that and more information about Illinois Gardener at their website, which is illinoisgardener.org. So you can check out the blog and other things. And we're also exploring the new horizons of modern information technology, because we're all also doing now some online chatting during the time the program is on the air, and I think also a little while after the show is actually off. And that's another way that people can get in with their questions. Because one of the things we know about Illinois Gardener is that it's very, very popular, and people can call in with questions on the air, but you can only do so many calls in half an hour. Mm-hmm. So this is a different sort of a way that people can get their questions answered. And I know that you've done
yes,
some of this yourself.
You know, being an oldster that I am, it was fun. I really had fun doing the online chat. So I hope people kind of look at that. And actually, I think about 15 minutes before the show, so you can still kind of, you know, if you want to sort of get some questions in before the show and then, you know, then watch the show, then obviously that's fine too. But it was really fun. We talked about a lot of different things. And so that was kind of fun to see.
So that's cool. Yeah. So that's Illinois Gardener, WILL TV. The show itself goes on the air at 7 on Thursday nights, and then we're doing some other things to try to expand the ways that people can get in on the show. So here this morning for our fellow oldsters, if you want to call us.
Experienced.
The old-fashioned way. Yeah, and you'd think we would have learned something by now, but no. 333-9455 in Champaign-Urbana, toll-free 800-222-9455. And if you would like to send a question by email, you can do that too. And that is will-talk, W-I-L-L-talk at illinois.edu. And in fact, I have a question here for you on email. The person here writes, we have several problems with our grass. For one, the grass seems to be very, very weak and easy to pull up. It appears as if the roots are weak. The ground itself has developed a lot of ruts and seems like we're dealing with erosion as well, perhaps from the lack of grass. My husband suspects it may be due to grubs. Can grubs create this kind of damage? Damage is pretty well all over the backyard, and even if it's due to grub activity and we treat that problem, is there anything we can do on our own to create a more lush growth without having to re-sod the entire yard?
Well, I think this is a really good question, because I think for a lot of people, they found out, especially last year was a perfect year for crabgrass, for one thing. So people were having all kinds of weed issues. It sounds like from this, maybe a couple things are going on. I don't know how old this particular lawn is, but it may have just gone through a decline over time. I would wonder about soil compaction. If it has some high clay content in the soil, it might be a certain amount of compaction going on there. So it sounds like the whole thing just needs to be invigorated, not necessarily resodded. So I think what I would suggest is, as we, in April is a great, I know I keep talking about April, but actually is a pretty good month to do a lot of things out in the yard. It is a great time. You might be thinking about doing some core aerification, and that's just a machine that goes through and it pulls out all these cores, and it helps to do a lot of things, but it helps if there's soil compaction, if there's thatch issues. It really helps a lot to sort of improve the soil itself. You might even think about doing maybe very, very thin layer of compost, you know, if that's not a route you necessarily want to go with with the core aerification, but even just a thin layer of compost sometimes is enough to sort of help, again, sort of help that soil. So it sounds like a soil issue to me to begin with. And then after that, I think some reseeding just to sort of thicken up the lawn. So you can, and April's a good time to do reseeding at that point. So you may decide you want to just go ahead and do that in April. And I would say it's probably a combination of both. Think about the soil. And it sounds like with the ruts, you need to add some soil compost or something anyway. So just do kind of a basic renovation of it just to help to sort of thicken up the lawn. You actually can rent these things called slit seeders that actually, you know, put kind of slits in the soil and then drop the seed in. You just want to make sure you get good seed to soil contact. So you want to make sure that either through raking or the slit seeder or whatever, you get good seed to soil contact. So I think about core aerifying, just doing some invigorating of the soil. It almost sounds like there's a compaction issue, would be my guess. So.
Okay. And chances are there probably doesn't have any grubs. They're probably not
the grub issue. Yeah, the grubs are very characteristic, as in, you know, they eat off the roots. So it's one of those things where the grass looks halfway decent and then it starts to turn kind of brown, and then you can grab it and then it pulls back like a toupee. It just sort of pulls back because they've eaten off the roots. So grubs are pretty characteristic of that. It's not the sort of just sort of general decline kind of thing. Typically, it's going to roll back. The sod will just roll back on its own because there's no roots. And I didn't hear that from the description.
Okay.
So I'm thinking, yeah, I'm glad you mentioned that.
Yeah, okay.
Grubs. So I don't think it's a grub issue. This wouldn't be the time to be treating for grubs anyway. So this is the time to be thinking about renovating the lawn.
So the listener had one other question, and that is that they say they have two big trees in their yard. One of them is a hard maple, and it's pretty close to their house. And that, combined with the fact that apparently they have broad eaves on their house, means that near the house they have a lot of shade, and they have not been able to get grass to grow there. So they want to know, can you recommend anything in the way of plants or ground cover that could grow there? Or they're about ready to give up and just put rocks to put rocks around the house.
Yeah, you know, dry shade is one of the hardest ones to deal with, to be honest with you. And full shade like that, of course, grass isn't going to grow there. Grass is not very good at growing in shade. Even the shade-loving grasses, for the most part, still need maybe 4 hours or so of sun. They just don't do well in 100% shade. So if it's truly 100% shade, I think they're on the right track to sort of forget the grass, think about some other plants. We have a number of plants that will deal with that sort of drier shade, but to realize when you're first getting them established, you may still have to water them. So there's actually really a nice little perennial that I like. It's called barrenwort or epimedium. It doesn't have the best name in the world, but it's a nice little perennial, and it does very well in those kind of drier shade kind of environments. Even things like periwinkle, some of the, you know, ground cover type plants. If you just water them periodically when they first get established, they will tolerate drought later. They'll certainly tolerate the shade, but drought sometimes ends up being a little bit more of an issue for them. So there's certainly some number of plants out there that you could sort of try, but I think in that first year, you're still going to have to water them. So I'd go with perennials, sort of forget the grass, go from there.
All right. On to some other callers. McLean County, line one.
Good morning.
Hi.
Just have a couple of questions for you. One of them is about what's a good time to plant spinach and some of those early spring things?
Now.
Right now.
Go right out
this afternoon.
Now,
yeah. Right as soon as I get off the phone.
Yes, actually, you know, the great thing about spinach and a lot of leafy stuff is that it's very tolerant of really cold weather.
Yeah.
It's amazing on how tolerant they are of cold weather.
Yeah, the concern is that the soil being so muddy, you know what I mean? That's what I'm trying to catch.
Yeah, is it an existing garden?
Mm-hmm.
If it's an existing garden, I wouldn't do anything to the soil. Mm-hmm. I would just spread the seed out there, just gently spread the seed out there, and you don't need to cover it up much anyway. And if you have some leftover potting soil, then put a little of potting soil on top. Don't till it. Don't do anything. Just go for it. So it's easy.
How about peas?
Peas actually do a little bit better sometimes if you actually start them indoors and get the seed going first. But for those, I have certainly done the same thing. If it's an existing garden, I just go out there and you plant them a little bit deeper, but I just stick my finger in, make a little hole, put the seed in, and then put a little potting soil on top or whatever. Because if it's really wet like that, you're absolutely right. You never, ever, ever want to till or work wet soil. It'll just turn into clods.
Okay.
So you're better off not working it at all and just use... You know, if you've got some potting soil or whatever.
So that we can do the spinach. And collard greens the same, right? Or
yeah.
Later.
Most of the leafy stuff actually is pretty darn good at tolerating really cold temperatures.
Okay. And then the peas, though, if we want to do it now, is it too early, too muddy, or should we wait a little bit on that one?
Yeah, usually we're probably thinking about the 1st of April for peas. But, you know, you certainly can. I've had, the only problem is I've ever had with peas is that sometimes if really early like this, if it stays really cold, they don't seem to germinate quite as well. That's why sometimes I actually germinate them indoors and then plant them outdoors.
That's,
you know,
called
at that point.
Torture for me.
That's tortured?
No, only because I don't know how to do it, and I don't have the time. And
oh, then I would say, yeah.
I don't have a green thumb. I kill them, actually, so I kill my indoor plants, so for me it wouldn't work. But the other thing that I've been thinking about, and I'm glad you called, I mean, you're on today so I can remember my question. I've been wanting to put some bushes out there that would have seeds over the winter. To feed the birds, so I don't have to have, I mean, I don't have a bird feeder, but that, for example, I'll leave stuff on. I left my rose hips on, and about 2 weeks ago, a whole bunch of robins came, ate them. Of course, they pooped all over the place, and then
it was fertilizer.
Orange stuff. And they're gone, because actually, literally, in one day, they cleaned all of them out.
Isn't that great?
Yeah, it was wonderful.
Yeah.
So is there a place I can get some information how to find bushes that are, you know, basically that hold the seeds and will keep it pretty much winter?
So it's one of those things that, you know, if they really, really like the fruit, they'll take it in the fall, and so it won't necessarily last through the whole season. But as far as information, there actually is, and I think it's still available. I hesitate a little bit, but I think it's still available from the Department of Natural Resources. They actually had a really nice pamphlet, and I think if you go to their website, just the Department of Natural Resources, and they have one called Landscaping for Wildlife, and I think it's still available now, just as a PDF that you could go ahead and use. And actually, it has some really nice lists of not just shrubs, but also grasses and all kinds of things that you could use for wildlife. It's really nice, I think, just overall pamphlet, good pamphlet. As far as some of the things you can use, you know, even if things like crab apples, obviously there's a tree, but some that have the smaller fruits on them, they really like those small fruits. A lot of the viburnums, and there's a lot of great viburnums out there, but there's quite a few of those that have some pretty nice fruit on them that the birds may take, you know, depending on how well they like them. Sometimes they have to go through kind of a cold period before they're actually probably a little bit more palatable. But a lot of the viburnums have some nice fruit on them as well. There's a nice one called arrowwood viburnum, which I think a lot of them seem to like. Even some of the native sumacs. I don't know if you know, some of the native sumacs actually have some berry type fruits on those that the birds seem to like as well.
Okay.
So I think there's a bunch out there that I think are, and I think it's a good thing to think about rather than always using the bird feeders and stuff. It's nice to have that supplemental food when the robins come in.
Yeah. Now I had a dog that would actually kill a bird. Or just get after them, I should say. She would have, I don't know if she ever really killed them. She killed rabbits and squirrels and stuff, but so I kind of waited till she crossed over, and she just did, you know, so we won't have someone killing the bird.
And
the eagle's noses are stuck on the ground, so it doesn't matter.
Yeah. never looks up.
They don't look up, right.
So I think that's good. And I think just the whole, just what you were mentioning, maybe in the fall, if you don't have a lot of insect and disease problems, just to leave a lot of that stuff up, whether it's grasses or, you know, whether it's some of your perennials and stuff, because a lot of those have seeds on them. I've seen the birds picking at old marigold flowers and stuff just because they have seeds on them. So just trying to maybe keep some of that over the winter time. You'll find that a lot of birds will take advantage of it.
One last question, and just you remind me something else. You know, people talk about clearing off your, like, our tomato plants and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
My husband and I argue back and forth. I like to leave them for mulching.
Yeah.
But then I thought I heard someone say not to do that because they'll hold diseases.
Yeah, anything, and tomatoes is certainly one of those that has a lot of leaf disease problems, and those are fungal diseases, and they hang out on those old leaves. So it really is, it's just a good rule of thumb, whether it's a flower or vegetable or whatever. If you're having some insect and disease problems on it, I would get it out of there as soon as you can, because a lot of that stuff will overwinter, and it'll just create more problems for you next year. So
basically, it's best just to take tomato plants out.
In the fall.
Okay, great. Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you. Let us go to another caller. And this is someone on a cell phone and on our line 4, the toll-free line. Hello?
Hello?
Yes, go ahead.
Yes. And I want you to know I'm pulled over.
Oh, good. That's good.
Thank you. I would feel very guilty.
You're so interesting, Sandy, that I just, you know, I can't pay attention and drive and do this at the same time. But I wanted to, I have two questions. One's about, well, this ash tree. And I've had a couple, I had an arborist look at it and then a couple of tree guys, you know, who weren't arborists, but they've been around trees for a long time. And I've had differing opinions. Should I, and plus they built an aseptic system right on one, close to one side of the tree, so the roots got destroyed. It's mm-hmm. a beautiful old tree, mm-hmm. but the last two leaf out and the first to fall leaves. I guess I'm wondering, you know, then they said you could water it a lot. It's a beautiful tree, but I've been told maybe I should cut it. Others say, well, you can try for a couple more years. It's, I guess I just have to wait and see. Maybe.
Well, so is your concern the fact that it's the overall health of the tree, or concern about emerald ash borer, or it's kind of a combination of those? Or
I'm concerned that this is a tree that loses its leaves pretty easily. It looks good when it leaves, but I guess I'm thinking, it's going to get, this is what the neighbors say, it's going to get ash borer anyway, so cut it down.
Well, you know, I think everybody has to kind of obviously make those sort of decisions on their own. So it's you know, how, but we don't know, you know, how soon, you know, the likelihood is that eventually it will. But that could be 5-6 years. I don't know. Or it could be 2 years. I don't know. You know, we don't really know.
But
I think, you know, it's one of those things that if it's truly something that you get a lot of pleasure out of, it seems like it's still halfway healthy. I would be reluctant to take down a tree like that. But granted, every single year that tree continues to grow, it's getting bigger, which means that it may be more expensive for you to take it down eventually. So that's kind of
actually,
the other half.
As you talk, I remember that one of the tree guys said, because it's kind of dead looking on the bottom, he would make it into kind of a vase shape.
So he'd limb it up, kind of limb it up and stuff.
He'd limb it up, and it wouldn't. That might do it too. But I have actually another question that's more solvable. why I even brought that up, I don't know. It's with raised beds. You gave me a great idea. I don't have to wait till it's dry. I want to put in the spring crops. I use these wonderful raised beds from Sam's, actually. I'm not a relative there, but I just, you know, they're pretty good, and they're cheap. But I have still soil in it. That soil's pretty dead, right? Do I just mix it up with some compost? It's pretty full, the soil, but it's, you know, last year's soil. I filled it with garden mulch from the recycle
place. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Do I have to revitalize that?
No, this is a big raised bed, or is this a container?
They're just like 4x8.
Oh, I wouldn't worry about, you know, it's always one of those things. Generally, those raised beds, what I found is that they tend to settle. And so usually often you have to add some more compost or a little bit more soil or whatever, you know, if you really feel like it's settled a lot. But again, at this point, as wet as the soil is right now, I wouldn't till it. I wouldn't mix it. I wouldn't do anything. I'd probably just, you know, if I want to add a little small layer, you know, I'm just thinking an inch or two of compost over the top just to sort of top dress it. You know, I think that's just fine. And then you can just plant right into that and, you know, everybody will be happy. But you don't have to, you know, that's the nice thing about those raised beds is that generally there's not a lot of soil compaction, and you can just go right in and plant right into them, and they dry faster too. So
that's good to know. One quick thing: we have a really sunny patio that we don't use much, and it's huge. I have read or seen online where people actually put raised beds over brick,
mm-hmm.
and I'm thinking, gee, wouldn't that be awful hot for the? You know, how tall would you have to be? Have you had any experience or success with putting raised beds over existing patios?
You know, I don't think that's a big issue. I think probably the biggest thing, I mean, I think it'd be fine if you want to do that. Probably the biggest thing I would be concerned about is drainage, just to make mm-hmm. sure it drains well, and then where does it drain? As in, if it starts draining out the side and takes soil with it, then you just have this kind of muddy mess all the way around it. So you really have to, I would really think long and hard about making sure that I have some way for it to drain and maybe actually put some pipe or something so it drains where I want it to drain and doesn't drain across the patio and then I just have this muddy mess all the time. Yeah. So I think it's fine. As long as it has plenty of drainage, I think a lot of stuff would love that. It's going to warm up faster and may need to be watered maybe a little bit more often, but I think it'll be fine.
Well, go thank for you it. So much.
All right, thank you. Just one thing real quick, you had a number of callers talking about raised beds, and I think that it is true. I mean, the thing about raised beds is that they do drain, and that you probably, with raised beds, are going to have to make sure that it gets adequate moisture, and that may mean watering, and it probably means that you're going to have to pay a little bit more attention to that than you would if you had something in the ground.
Yeah, you do, but I have found it because I have some fairly tall raised beds that I found you do have to. I pay it a little bit more attention, but not really. It's not like having because you have such a minor 4x8, so they're not. You have so much soil mass in there. It's not like having a small container on your patio, so it's a little bit different. But you're absolutely right. They're going to drain faster, and because they are going to dry out somewhat faster, but I mulch them. I go ahead and mulch them, so it's not bad. But it's definitely one of those things that you may have to pay if you just totally ignore them most of the time. That's probably not a particularly good thing to do with raised beds. Yeah. But the nice thing is, you know, this time of year they'll dry out much faster, so you can get in there faster and you can plant faster and all that kind of stuff, and they'll warm up faster and all that. So there's some advantages in the springtime certainly. Yeah. But I love them.
Yeah, okay, let's see where we can talk to next. Somebody in Champaign. Line two. Hello.
Hello.
Yes, hi.
Oh, fine. Thank you. I wasn't sure I was on. I had two quick questions for Sandra Mason. One was I've not been successful in taking care of a couple areas where there's crabgrass. Mm-hmm. I've tried pre-emergent sprays, and I've tried pre-emergent fertilizers, and nothing seems to, you know, it doesn't work at all. It's not a big area. Generally, I have my grass pretty well fertilized and cut short, and so it's more a matter of a couple spot areas. Mm-hmm. I particularly want to rip it all out, but I haven't been successful with what you buy at the normal stores to treat it. I put it on early, so it's not an issue. And then the second question is, what do you suggest for top dressing grass? Do you prefer topsoil or do you prefer composted manure? I have an area around a maple tree, which, of course, is a constant battle.
Well, I'll just go ahead and answer the last question first. I think, compost is great if you have access to that. Now, if you have better access to soil, I think that's fine. Sometimes the thing I found with I like the compost in that it seems to be a finer material, whereas sometimes with the soil that you get, it's kind of, has all these big clods in it, and sometimes it just doesn't seem like it sort of is the way I want it to be, whereas with compost, it always tends to be this little finer grade to that. Does that make sense?
Sure,
so it looks better.
It gets wet, then it's a real problem.
Yeah. So those clods and stuff kind of bother me. Yeah. So I think compost is just easier. So maybe that's part of it. It's just easier to put on. It looks better once it's done because it filters in really well, and it does help the soil. So I'd probably be more apt to go with compost. Mm-hmm. And usually this time of year you can get plenty. I don't know if you're around here, the Landscape Recycling Center, you say, has plenty of compost that they'd be willing to deliver for you. The other thing, as far as the crabgrass, I guess I'd wonder about a couple things. Does it seem like the soil is just really compacted?
Well, part of the area is part of the problem is I have a neighbor who doesn't do anything, and it's growing from his yard into mine.
Mm-hmm.
And my yard is pretty good, all bluegrass. It gets some areas, but where it's encroaching, I try to develop a buffer zone there. But I did aerate it last year, which is the first time I've done that. So I don't know if that'll help, but. Just trying to get a couple areas with crabgrass out, and they said the pre-emergence, both the granular, like fertilizer, and the spray, I've never had any success with those.
And you put them on in the spring?
Yeah, I put them on early in the spring, end of March, first part of April, before it's even come up.
So, and you know this is crabgrass? You're sure it's crabgrass?
I'm sure it's crabgrass. Yeah, I can sit there and pull it. Sometimes I actually get down on the grass and pull it out, and it is crabgrass,
Okay, because there's lots of grasses out there that end up being weeds.
And well, so, I could be mistaken, but it looks to me like crabgrass, the the roots go down and go sideways, and you pull them up, and there's little clumps, you know.
Yeah, it could be. I mean, because crabgrass is an annual, so it has to come back every year from seed. So that's why we use pre-emergent, because generally that takes care of those seeds from germinating. So that's why usually pre-emergents are pretty effective. The fact that you're not getting good control makes me wonder a little bit if it's not one of the perennial weedy type grasses. So that's why I'm wondering a little bit. So I just make sure there's some.
You guys should get it looked at.
I would definitely have somebody look at it or bring a sample
then
it's in.
Too late.
Pardon?
By then it's too late if it's crabgrass.
Well, but accurate identification makes a big difference, because if it's a perennial, that's not going to help you a whole lot with those, to some extent, but it's not going to help you a whole lot with the pre-emergence. So I would, or look at some pictures, whatever, make sure it's crabgrass.
Okay.
The other thing I would really think long and hard about is that crabgrass loves open areas, or actually all the weedy grasses, they love open areas. If there's no open area, they have a really hard time competing against really thick grass. So I would also be thinking about adding some grass seed to these areas to thicken them up, some good grass, and then you don't have those open areas, because anytime you have an open area, you're going to get crabgrass, I can guarantee you. So you really, and April's a good time to do that, but obviously you can't do both of those at the same time. Use
right.
The pre-emergent as well as the...
Okay, good. Thank you very much.
Uh-huh.
All right, and we'll try real quick one more. Chicago, line one, hello.
Hello, I'm up in Chicago, and we've had these peach trees that grow pretty well every year. They're a type of peach called stone peaches, and they grow pretty good in this area, except if it's a real cold spring. But we have them from the time they're little baby trees to, when they get bigger, and it takes about 6 years to produce fruit. But we've had this one baby tree seems that every year some type of animal eats it, like a squirrel or a rabbit eats the branches off. And then it happened last year, and the branches came back up. And it happened again now this winter, and I'm just wondering if the branches come back up and it develops into a tree, will it be a shorter tree in the end, or will that affect the height of the tree or the size of the tree as it gets bigger?
So these are coming up from the base?
Yeah, and then some squirrel or rabbit or whatever eats the branches.
Yeah,
must
it's probably rabbits.
Hungry. Yeah.
Yeah, if it's during the wintertime, I imagine it's probably rabbits.
Yeah, and then last year the branches came back from the base.
Yeah, and they typically will. So it's not that it's going to be shorter.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
Okay.
No, yeah.
I was just wondering if it would be a stunted in growth or something like that.
No, sometimes they actually are more vigorous because they have the original root system, but now they don't have as much top, and so they just take off like crazy.
Oh,
so sometimes they are almost invigorated sometimes by the rabbit damage. But we've seen an awful lot of rabbit damage, and of course it's high. A lot of times it's high in the tree because they sit on top of the snowbank and eat the top part of the tree. I saw some damage that was easily 6 foot in the air.
Oh,
and it wasn't a giant rabbit. It was just they were sitting on, you know. They
are
were,
you sure?
Well, it could have been Harvey. I don't know. But yeah, so they were sitting on it. So we've seen an awful lot of damage on fruit trees this year.
Well, thanks a lot.
All right, thank you. Well, there, we're going to have to wrap it up for this time around. With the promise that Sandy will be back on the program next month. She's here once a month to talk about lawn and garden care. And then also, if you're interested in gardening information and you have questions and you're within the coverage area, you tune in for the program Illinois Gardener on WILL Television. That's Thursday nights at 7 o'clock. It's a live show. And they take calls and questions like this, and also they do it online. Hey, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Sandy Mason, she's horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County.